Willie and D. Mace, hour number two. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Nick Frazier here with you. Later in the hour, Predators goaltender Scott Wedgwood, who is in Nashville for the first time as a Predator, signed during that free agent frenzy on July 1st. Brady Shea also there. We got a chance to catch up with Brady last week. Had Steven Stamkos yesterday. Today, we talked to Scott Wedgwood. Now, first and foremost, before we do that, It's Hutton time. Hutton o'clock. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike and Hutton and Withrow. So.
What's up, guys?
Hutt, yesterday we had your cohort on. We had Withrow on. And D. Mace mistakenly said Withrow and Hutton. And then Chad was like, you know what? I kind of like the ring to that. Yeah. And we kind of said, well, why is it Hutton and Withrow?
Yeah, so we made a executive order. And we said, if we have Withrow on, it's going to be Withrow and Hutton. And then when we have Hutton on, it's going to be Hutton and Withrow. Just so you don't think, well, what are they doing? So we're telling you now that when Withrow's on, whenever we have him, it's going to be his name first and then yours.
So is it D. Mace and Willie whenever Willie's out?
It's just Willie and D. Mace.
That's a good question.
Yeah, it's just Willie and D. Mace. That's all.
I'm just checking. I need to get it right. Hey, Mace.
But if I come on your show, and thank you for inviting me the last time I was on. I had a great time
a year ago.
But if I come on the show again, you can say D. Mace and Willie.
Okay.
There we go.
Smart. Yeah. Smart move.
You see, Willie knows now.
What goes around comes around,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Hey, Mace, I ran into a former Spartan, C.J. Hayes, over the weekend.
Okay.
He, FRA Middle School, I believe, is where he ran into your daughter. But no joke, went to Michigan State and wanted to, because during your era with the Titans, he saw you pull up in a car that he loved, and he thought you were a badass.
Oh, wow. Well,
how about that?
That's a story for you. Well, I'm glad he chose to go to Michigan State.
Well, he transferred to Syracuse to play wide receiver, I believe.
He ended up transferring to Syracuse after that. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, man, small world. You never know.
I know, man. And he was he's a big fan. And, again, he's a legit dude as well. So,
is he living here now?
Yeah, he was back. Well, I saw him here. Yeah.
Okay.
He's back here.
Okay. Well, he's a
solid player, too. Mm-hmm.
Former Spartan, I may reach out to him just because he was a former Spartan.
So, I'll link you up. We talked to Chad a little bit about a lot of Tennessee stuff specifically, but earlier this during our show, we were talking about all that Georgia's dealing with right now. It's the wind blows hard at the top, right? As our cohort Doug Matthews used to say, the higher you go up on the totem pole or the flagpole, the harder the wind blows. Mm-hmm. So they're under the scrutiny that national title contenders are a lot. But with the media days being down in Dallas, that's had an interesting angle. So what's been the most interesting thing about SEC media days for you so far?
I mean, honestly, just listening to Nick Saban be a member of the media and having Alabama players.
I agree.
Here they are discussing the rat poison. And having to downplay whatever Saban is saying about Alabama or not picking to go to the SEC championship game. That's intriguing to me. And I like Saban, Belichick, Brady. I think they're all going to crush it because I think they're all honest and they all have the status to be able to say whatever they want. And really no one's going to combat them because of who they are and what they've done and accomplished. Who's to say that they're wrong with their opinion? I think Saban, in effect, Willie, can be the commissioner of college football. Without the de facto commissioner of college football, because they're going to go to him with every issue, small or large, and whatever he says, we're going to be discussing on a daily basis because it's Nick Saban saying it, and his what he says carries weight. Aside from that, Kirby Smart and what he's saying about Georgia and the recent arrests off the field, but on the track, I guess I should say. And how he's disciplining. I didn't know you could fine players through NIL. That was news to me. And I mean, in the NFL, that's collectively bargained.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're
so
going
that's my question.
Retroactively
is he, is he
money
in
back.
Communication with them? Like, he's not really specifying. He's basically saying it's them that are doing it. But are we to imply that he's in constant contact and say, okay, I got this guy. I want you guys to take their money away. Like, does he have a say in that? Or is that completely up to
the people? I mean, conduct detrimental to the collective? Is that the language? I mean,
it has to be in the contract.
Conduct detrimental to the team. And I mean, it's not like they're going to go out and pay players that Kirby Smart doesn't want in his locker room. So they're in constant communication. So, yeah, I mean, I think he would be handing that down. And the collective is certainly not going to do anything without the blessing of Kirby Smart. They're not going to find a player without Kirby knowing about that.
Yeah, you may be right. But that shouldn't let Kirby Smart off the hook, because it seems like he's sort of using it as, you know, him being off the hook. You're still the coach of this team. You still have a responsibility to those young men. You told their families that. You still have a responsibility to those young men. So what are you doing? You know, because it seems like in this day and age, you can't suspend anybody, because that's the difference between going to the SEC championship and ultimately going to the college football playoffs. It may not mean a lot now, but it's the difference between going and sitting at home and just going to a regular bowl game because you chose to suspend a guy that had every right to be suspended. But I think coaches nowadays, especially at programs like Georgia or some of these other big programs, they're scared to discipline guys in regards to suspending them because they don't want to lose games.
Well, I mean, and here's the thing too. They don't want to lose games. And I think it's more of a penalty now in this era actually fining a player than it is sitting a player. And it's not going – I mean, Oklahoma State's opening up against directional school U. I don't know who they're – it's not like suspending Ollie Gordon a game is going to be detrimental to the season, nor would it be detrimental in most cases across the top end of college football, Mace. Mm-hmm. I mean, Georgia's a bad example this year. They're opening up against Clemson. But I think the out-of-the-pocket book is more – out of the wallet is worse than sitting out one game and more detrimental – but here's the other aspect of it. Kirby is at the podium saying, well, you know, tell me who's suspending players, who's fining players, who's penalizing players. That's all well and good. I can't do that. But what I can say is tell me who else we're talking about on a routine basis having these issues off the field. It's Georgia. It is a big issue within that program. And while it's not all on the coach, whatever they're doing, and they got a $60 million lawsuit from the father of the player who lost his life. There was also a staffer driving one of those issued cars from a dealership out of Ohio that was a part of their NIL package. The list goes on and on. And this was a while back now, considering how many incidents we've had since then for this offseason. We had a topic yesterday on whether or not we'll see another issue involving a traffic violation. Specifically citation, more than a citation, I should say, an arrest. I said yes. And we're this close to the season, and I said yes, because it's Georgia football. We're not seeing it at Texas. Texas has a long line of Lamborghinis outside their locker room, too. I don't see that happening down in Austin like I do in Athens.
Do you think, Hutt, it comes from – frankly, let's just say this. It comes from a lack of respect from his players to him. There's a difference when you're at Alabama and Nick Saban has and I use Alabama and Nick Saban because to me they are the poster team or program for doing things supposedly right and winning at the same time. Now, they've had their problems. I get that. But it's not like what you have been seeing. To me, it's a lack of respect from the player to the coach because, again, you wouldn't see this at a Alabama program. Why? Because Coach Saban set a standard early, and he didn't deviate. Now, he had to change as far as a person because the athlete is different, but what he wanted him to do, he didn't change. And I think the players respected that. You didn't see that, or if it happened, nobody knew about it. But you don't see that in Georgia. It's like Kirby says something, and then 2 months later, you have the same exact thing continue to happen over and over again.
Yeah. Well, here, two things. First, I was dumb too. I went way too fast one time in a Mercedes compressor that my girlfriend had in high school. The speedometer got up to 210 miles per hour. I didn't hit that, but I nearly hit 200. It was stupid, but I didn't do it again because her dad put a governor on the speedometer. On the accelerator after I did that on Verville Road in Morrison, Tennessee. Point being, these guys are getting to a stoplight and someone's revving up, you know, frat boy you is revving up the engine next to them and they're taking off at the green. That's number one. Number two, this is beyond Kirby Smart. This is a statewide issue, according to their legislators. But here's my problem. What the offensive lineman, forgive me, I forgot his name, Bo Hughley, that's his name. Guess his bond? He bonded out, which is fine. Both players bonded out. What do you think he bonded out for?
About 50 grand.
Willie?
I'll say 100 grand.
$26.
$26.
Oh, wow, what?
$26 was his bond.
That ain't teaching nobody a lesson.
That's not Kirby Smart's issue. If it was Kirby Smart, these guys wouldn't be getting pulled over and arrested. Just point blank. There wouldn't be an issue because we wouldn't know about this. And I'm not trying to blame Kirby for that. Maybe it's more. Maybe he takes it more serious than that. But a $26 bond, I mean, that's ridiculous.
So it is bigger than him for sure. So I go back to the old school, and that is I still think it sends a message to players that you curtail the playing time. That does help deter. If there's a fear across the board of if I step out of line, I'm not going to play. But the other problem that we talked about, Hutt, is, okay, that kid might just leave now. That's the fear of a coach, right? I might lose a really good player who's just going to go create the same situation in a different place.
And I would say the player that replaces him, Willie, at Georgia is probably going to take off and street race.
Maybe.
I hate to place blame on guys.
Right,
who aren't
and Kirby
doing
Smart
it.
Was quick to point out yesterday. He goes, I take issue with people that think that every kid is like that. Right. He said most of our kids, it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. Right. That's not what they're about. But there you can't ignore that some guys make dumb decisions. And I'm like you, Hutt, and Mesa said the same thing. If we were put in that same situation, I might make a dumb decision too, along the same lines. But that is where I think a good coach is able to navigate that situation, right? And it's complicated. This is new, and it's moving a million miles an hour. Every coach is dealing with it because you want every kid to put the money in the right perspective that you want to develop. You want to think big picture. You want to become an NFL player. You want to become a successful person after your playing career is over. That's where your priorities should be, but not everybody can see that when they're 18, especially if you're flashing all this green.
Big picture, too, and just across the board. I mean, those racing down interstate or whatever, wherever they're doing it, they're probably doing it on a side street. Mm-hmm. There are bystanders everywhere. And again, like there was a woman for the statewide legislation, there was a woman that paired with one of the representatives that had this based on a loss of a loved one that was just driving down the interstate. And one of these cars, peeled out, but also hit this other car into a guardrail or something. Again, it's they've lost lives within the program too. I mean, we've been there and discussed that. They're facing lawsuits. That's why they're going through all this training. It's because of the lawsuits behind the scenes. They're following the lawyer's advice. I agree, Willie, with what everything you're saying. The issue I have is Kirby Smart's going to have to. They're going to have to issue a statement that says we're aware and we're letting the legal process play out. And instead, the legal process is saying $26 bond. Come back whenever the season's over. That's the vibe. And it's not every player, but it's enough to where you're thinking this is a Georgia alone problem, even though it probably happens at universities across the country, not to this level where 24 different related arrests like this have been at Georgia over the last 2 years. That's way different than the message that was sent yesterday, which is, well, we have a great collective. We raise a lot of money and we're going to find these guys, even though you've never heard of them.
Yeah, you're right. Now, before we end this with you, Hutt, SEC Media Days, a lot. Yeah. Obviously, they're in Texas, so a lot of questions have been geared toward the University
of Texas. Hopefully
for the
final time.
Exactly. Two questions in one. Where do you think Texas fit in all this now? And where does UT, so both of the UTs, where does UT fit in this?
Man, Nico is the wild card there. Mm-hmm. We don't know. He should be a lot better than what we saw last year, though. And that means, and with a defense that can get after the passer, it's 50-50 on whether we're going to see Tennessee at the end of the season battling for in the discussion of a back end playoff spot. That's where they could be. You know, if Missouri and Ole Miss are going to be there because of their schedule, if Nico takes off and has one of those amazing seasons like he's rated to have, based on where he's coming out in high school, who knows? But from Texas's standpoint, I don't know if you guys agree with this. If they were still in the Big 12, this would be national championship or bust for Sark.
Oh, of course. Yes.
I don't get that vibe now, but it's not like Texas's schedule is equal to what we've seen from Oklahoma's. I think that Texas can be in the SEC championship game against Georgia. Georgia, by the way, their schedule's no cupcake.
Not at all.
They've got their four toughest opponents in the conference are on the road. So Texas is in the mix, no doubt. Saban is saying that. He also said they're not going to come in and run the conference. I agree with him there too, but they're extremely talented. They lost a lot of speed at wide receiver. They replaced them with a lot of speed at wide receiver. And I'm guessing they did that on their defensive front as well. They still have the quarterback, although he's injury prone. And I can't help but think what a storyline it would be if there's a Manning at quarterback by the end of the season.
That would be a heck of a storyline.
Exactly. I would love that.
Just getting started with these storylines. We got to cut it a couple minutes short today because we're going to be joined by Scott Wedgwood of the Predators here on our next segment. But great stuff, as always. And next time when we talk to you, it'll be training camp on for the Titans. So looking forward to that.
Cannot wait. Thank you, guys. Enjoy the rest of the week.
We have officially made it through the offseason.
Exactly.
We have bridged the gap. We've got it.
And now the long wait for the regular season.
Absolutely.
Yes, which is underrated. That is underrated. From late July, it's football season. Well, we don't have a game for another 6 weeks.
August 17th, we're going to be thinking, man, this is a long month.
That's right. All right, Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. When we come back, Scott Wedgwood will join us. In Nashville for the first time as a member of the Predators, he joins the goaltending team. We'll talk to him next here on 102.5 The Game. Back here on Willie and D-Mace, you're on 102.5 The Game, 106.3 The Game Nashville app. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. And as we promised you earlier, we're going to talk to one of the newest Predators, Scott Wedgwood, in town for the first time as a Nashville Predator, meeting with the media, getting used to the city, being welcomed by the staff, and he's nice enough to come on with us for a few minutes. Scott, thank you so much for joining us, and welcome to Nashville.
No problem. Thank you, guys. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we can hear you great. And, Scott, it was interesting. I just thought about you watching the All-Star game for baseball, which is in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, Arlington, of course, the SEC Media Days. This is a college football crazy town. Just like the place that you're coming from in Dallas, they like their football down there. That's going on in Dallas right now. So you left the action to come to an action-packed Nashville here.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. Once the season ended, my lease was up anyway, so we spend our summers in Plymouth, Michigan.
You're ready to move on.
The training is going on. The golf's over there. We got good weather, so got out of the heat.
I'm curious, you know, Scott, you grew up on Ontario. Hockey is such the headline sport, always will be up there. But when you move to like a town like Dallas to play there for a few years, how much do the other sports sort of get into your vernacular?
Well, you're always checking in. I think, you know, as athletes, I think we all don't want to speak for everybody, but, you know, we're always watching. A lot of the guys on the team are obviously big fantasy football players. You know, the Rangers were doing well. FC Dallas, we had some soccer fans. So I think everyone was really obviously keen on watching or keeping up with what was going on around us. And you can't not know about the Cowboys in that town.
Sure.
So obviously, you know, went to a few games, was obviously a very different situation with the size of the Jerry Bowl and all that. But no, guys are big into it. You know, we are obviously acclimated with the culture that is football over there, but you know, you kind of feed in, you got your niche with the hockey team. They're well-known, well-respected, and you know, similar to here, you got a massive following of the Titans. You got Predators fans, and then you know, obviously finding out now about the Nashville Sounds, and then you know, I think there's a few other things we're gonna have to get acclimated with. But it's been exciting, and obviously a sports town here as well.
So, Scott, D-Mace is gonna ask you about, you know, your specific situation that you're walking into, but from a general sense, it was really exciting for us to watch all of the frenzy go down on July 1st. Because it's not only yourself, but Brady Shea, Steven Stamkos, Jonathan Marchessault. It was really the talk of the league. What was your perspective as all of that is happening? You're taking care of your situation, but you're seeing what Nashville is doing. That had to be an adrenaline rush.
Yeah, obviously when they called, it was you know, a situation where they were looking at extending, you know, UC Saros and looking for a stability behind him. So our conversations were obviously geared along that, but, you know, you're not hiding in a cave. You know that the team's got money to spend, and they're obviously doing their sales pitch, and they don't know what they're going to land at that exact moment, but obviously they have their bids out there and trying to sell you on a situation, and also I'm sure they're trying to sell the guys they're trying to sign. So once everything started, you know, flying out, and then the news kind of broke, the free agent frenzy is such a followed thing in the hockey world that, you know, once you saw Stamkos' name kind of pop up that he was no longer returning to Tampa and coming to Nashville, and I had already agreed to terms at the news break of his. My deal obviously wasn't signed off on yet, but obviously got super excited knowing that. And then, you know, followed up with Mark Gisseau and Brady Shea. You can't not, you know, be an internal hockey fan and a fan of the game, let alone knowing playing against those guys for so long, how vital they are to any team they're on, and let alone getting the three of them along with myself. It really sent a, like you said, a splash and a shockwave through the free agency. And Nashville obviously came out on top, knowing that they improved their team tremendously.
We'll talk with Scott Wedgwood, the newest Nashville Predator. Now, Scott, obviously, you know, Barry is known around here for many great things. But the one thing that we do love about him is his openness whenever he comes on these airways here on 102.5 The Game. His openness and willingness to talk about some things that maybe other GMs don't want to talk about or try to hold close to the vest. Where do you see your fit with this team? Because I know he had to be honest with you in what he was looking for, knowing that they just re-signed Saros and they got this young kid, Askarov, in the wings waiting. So I know he had to be upfront and honest with you.
Yeah, obviously, you know, he made his pitch, and I understand the situation. But at the same time, you know, it wasn't that they weren't excited to – obviously get me and use me, and that's kind of the situation I put myself in. As you know, juice played a lot, and you know, as that does wear down the body, there's going to be opportunities for a few games here and there. Then obviously, you know, Askarov's young, I've been in the situation, it's you want to play in the National Hockey League yesterday. It's not that you want to wait, you don't want to spend any more time, and everything's earned, myself included. You know, you could even say that, you know, across the league, you struggle as a goalie, there's always somebody there to take your spot and give their best. It's how I made my presence in the league. I got an opportunity, jumped on it, you know, never looked back. And that's, you know, a situation I've been proud of and rewarded myself. And that big reward came with this contract. So, you know, to get in there, give the team a chance to win every time in the net. There's nothing guaranteed on starts or, you know, situations or what they're looking to do for numbers wise on the game sheet just yet. But, you know, I've proven to be a reliable goalie and a goalie that can win games in this league, and, you know, plan to do that and, you know, obviously stay in the NHL. So, you know, Askarov's going to be doing the same thing behind me, and Juice is going to be doing the same thing to put his best foot forward every night. And that's, you know, friendly competition. There's no harm, no foul. But obviously when you have a kid of his caliber, I don't know him, he's going to be, you know, pushing to get up there or get a look regardless of how that comes. And he's got to make the most of it when he gets it. And, you know, that's the truth of it. I'm going to cheer for him. He's part of my team. We want to win as an organization. And if he can get in there and help us win games, we're all for it. You know, the biggest championship is the hardest to win. And it takes more than just, you know, five superstars. It's a whole team and a whole organization. So whatever we need to win, we'll do it. And, you know, I'm proud to be a part of it, and we'll see where it goes.
We're talking with Scott Wedgwood, the newest Nashville Predator. Now, what were your views of this organization prior to coming here? In your short time here, has it rang true? What you thought, is it true?
Yeah, obviously a well-built team, well-built town. It's a fun town. Obviously gets the rep for the bachelor and bachelorette parties and things like that. But, you know, and just, you know, looking at some neighborhoods, you know, teammate in Dallas, Matt Duchene was here for a long time and raved about his time here and how well it fit in, and just the community outside of just the, you know, the downtown and where he lived and things like that. So he's been a nice resource. But, you know, talking with NHL Network hosts and old guys, you know, you got everyone that kind of seems to play here is, you know, somehow got a tie to a house or a job in this area. So it obviously speaks volumes for how well they fit in and how well they've been treated. You know, looking for a spot myself right now that will be great for my family and I. It's, you know, it's definitely delivered. And, you know, walking around the arena, you got flags on buildings saying, let's go Preds. You got people wearing T-shirts just down Broadway last night. I was walking. I saw a number of them. And it's exciting to see when you got a town wearing stuff in the off season, and obviously excited for hockey to get going here.
Scott Wedgwood is with us. The last 2 years for the Dallas Stars, 25-15-8. And Scott, along those lines, last year in particular, you had to play a bunch of games in a row, and a couple of them were during that stretch were against Nashville. And that is sort of the art of being the backup goalie, is you have to flourish whether you're playing once a week or once every 2 weeks, or if you get thrust into a situation where you're playing 10, 12 straight games. What have you learned over the years of how to be prepared and be able to be effective in that role?
It's been a journey. Obviously, like any kid, I wanted to be the number one. I want to play 82 games. You know, I feel like any goalie in the position wants to do that. It's hard to take a step back. And conversations a long time ago, when Mackenzie Blackwood, who's now in San Jose, him and I were battling in the American League in Jersey. And, you know, we reconnected years later and as a duo, and we were both in the NHL on New Jersey. And he's like, man, like you're a little bit different now. And I kind of took it as like, you know, like I didn't have anything against you. I just wanted to win. And, you know, it's come full circle of the sense now where I've got a job. I've been able to, you know, be that luxury option between, you know, like you said, 10, 12 in a row, once every 3 weeks, back-to-back, teams got travel. You don't get the, you know, the pretty game where you're playing the lowest seed team and, you know, nothing's ever guaranteed in this league, and we know that, but you get a little bit of an easier schedule. But that's the role, and someone's got to do it. Might as well be me. But, you know, I love doing it. It's a hard role. There's times where the game's, you know, you're winning by a bunch and they want to rest, you know, your starting goalie and you're in for a third period after sitting and all of a sudden it's 7-0 and you got to play a third period out of nowhere or injuries, anything by that matter. So just kind of learned to keep my body ready. Obviously, warm-up routines, stretching routines, things like that. But you do get cold and it's honestly more of a mind shift than anything. You can be joking with me about anything in between the bench and all of a sudden, you know, coach turns over and says, you're going, I know people can get in my head, but that switch of your eyes go into a focus and your mind turns on and all of a sudden you're on the ice and nothing else matters. It's something I've worked on with mental coaches. It's something I pride myself on, and being an option any day of the week is it's a hard thing to do, but found a way to get comfortable at it.
You know, Scott, they said, you know, that sometimes the hardest job in professional sports, or at least let's say football, is to be the backup quarterback, because you never know when you're going to get an opportunity to play, but you got to be ready to play as if you're a starter. Is it the same way for a goalie? Like, that's one of the most important positions on the ice, because you never know at any moment, depending on how the game is going, you may be thrust in there, so you got to be ready.
Especially when you got it, you don't even get a chance to warm
exactly.
up. Like a relief pitcher gets to throw like 8 warm-up tosses. Yeah. You guys just go right in there.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, you hit the nail on the head. You got to know that not that we have plays like football, but I know every system, every, you know, penalty kill structure, every power play structure, what we're looking forward to do in the D zone, like all that stuff is ingrained into everybody. But like you said, you know, you get an injury to a winger or something, another winger's got a double shift, but he's playing the same role. He's just got to ask more out of his body. To be in there and have your mind, you know, you're not on the bench, you know, looking at the stars, but you're focused on the game. You want the guys to win. I'm obviously, cheering them on as a part of the team, but, to turn the heart rate up, sometimes I wouldn't call it getting lucky, but there's times where you can see the team struggling. It's a 3-goal game. Goalie isn't playing bad, but there might be a shakeup and you get your heart rate going a little bit. It's just a preparation in case that, you know, next goal is unfortunate and you got to go. Sometimes, like you said, there could be a certain play where, you know, somebody tweaks something, there's an injury, and all of a sudden you're, you know, chewing a gum wrapper, and all of a sudden you got to be making saves to help your team win a game. And, you know, it's not easy to do. And, I think, you know, like my career, I've bounced around a lot. I've been up and down a lot. I've gotten opportunities the day before I wasn't even in the NHL to step up and play, and I've executed. So, you know, when those opportunities come, you got to be ready and, like you said, take advantage of it. And that's something I've prided myself on doing.
Scott Wedgwood is with us. Scott, the Predators have had a great reputation of being able to develop goalies, not just a star like a Pecorine, but, you know, if you look at the guys, my broadcast partner, Chris Mason, you know, there's a lot of really good success stories of goalies who have gotten to a next level. You've, I'm sure, had great instruction to this point in your career. You're a veteran goalie, but a Mitch Korn who's back in the fold now, a Ben Vanderklok, what kind of contact have you had with them, and what do you look forward to in working with them?
Yeah, a couple of phone calls, obviously, as we've got going here after the free agent signing. Obviously, fans of my game are the ones who got me. So,
right.
The ability to kind of talk to them, and, you know, Benny's looked over my video. And the nice thing of this position is you're never going to know it all. I feel like I've come into my own the last couple of years on, you know, a little bit of the consistency side and understanding what works for my game. But I still don't feel like I've reached my my full potential, and that's just part of being an athlete. You always want to find, you know, what can you do and where can you do it to get better. You know, we'll sit down once we all get in town together and have a game plan for how we want to approach my my playing time. And I think, you know, the way I skate and the way UC skates will be pretty fun for Benny to work with us day in and day out, as we both like to move around the crease. And, you know, he's a little slightly shorter than I am, but we both like to play aggressively and make players make perfect shots. So I think he'll have a lot of fun working with the both of us. And then, you know, like I said, as we get going here, I think it's going to work really well with the experience that Mitch has, you know, through this entire lineup. There's guys like Carter Hutton that came through here. I'm really sure. Close with Arizona. He found a starting role after being in Nashville. Kevin Lankin did really well here. Like you said, Mace, obviously a big fan of Pekka, and walked past his statue last night. So it's obviously a goalie market, and they protect him down there. And that's a great thing. You know, you show me a good team, you'll show me a good goalie. And that's a repetition or a recipe for success. And that's a lineup thing too.
When we get a chance to talk to Chris Mason on this show, or if you listen to him during a broadcast, he's the first to say he's a huge goalie nerd. So Mace and I have heard a lot of stuff about goalies, and we're soaking it up. One thing that he has taught us is how much the position has evolved, even in the last 5 to 7 years. You can listen to, like, maybe shooters aren't shooting as much from different areas as they used to. They're waiting for the perfect shot. How much have you seen the position change in the last 4 to 5 years?
A lot. I mean, I'm still hoping that the gear goes back to a little bit less cardboard and a little more action, because I love the kick saves and the toes up stuff that Mace would be very happy. I'm sure he'll love a few of my glove saves this year, as they have a little bit of an old school tail to them.
Okay.
But it's become a percentage game, and I think that's the best way to describe it. You got guys sitting in you know, different positions at different points of the ice in your end zone that take away, you know, a higher percentage than, you know, a reactional standpoint, to the point where if I can give you a perfect shot, you got to hit it, and you hit it, you know, 9 out of 10 times, it's 900 save percentage. Why would I change? Where if it might be 100% for, you know, 8 shots, and then it might be, you know, 50-50 for the next couple on reaction. It's become a percentage game, and forcing guys to beat you with perfect shots. And the game's getting better, and I think it's coming to that head now where goals are going up because players are so skilled, the game's so fast, goalies are working on percentages. And, you know, it's hard to be perfect when the game moves that quickly. And I still like to react and, you know, use my hands a lot. So it's finding that mix. And I think the odd time when you see these goals go in and everyone's like, well, why is he doing that? It's the percentage. And unfortunately, I lost that gamble at this point. But you don't say anything when it's, you know, 15 in a row. It's the one every 15 or 20 that go in. And all of a sudden it's, you know, change your whole situation. But as a goalie, we'd take those numbers anytime.
Now, this is more, before we let you out here, Scott, this is more of a philosophical question from a, you know, goalie's perspective, because you did mention, you know, you and Soros are more so aggressive. So is it more so just the philosophy? Some guys are aggressive or some guys are more laid back. How did you sort of take on that play of being an aggressive goalie? Was it someone that you saw, someone you followed? You enjoyed watching, so you sort of patterned your game after that person?
Little bit of that. I think, you know, the first thing that really stood out, I was a defenseman until I was about 12 and up to 8. And I think, you know, you look at the guys that play a little more aggressively can get away with the ability to recover. I feel like the great skaters usually tend to be a little more aggressive and athletic in the sense that they can make up ground if they get caught a little bit further outside their crease. But it's also like the way I like to play the game. I don't like to really wait to, you know, get hit with a puck on my goal line and try and frame the net and those percentage numbers. I like to catch pucks. I like to, you know, take down angles. And then if I got to go back door in a full split, I've worked on my flexibility in the sense that I can make up for that room. So, you know, obviously, olden days now, but watching, you know, the Broders and, Curtis Josephs and guys like that were, obviously good skaters and the ability to cover net as well as, you know, bring their teams to the top of the ladder is something that just, you know, ingrained in me as a kid when I switched over to goalie to play that way and make it a lot of fun. And that's, you know, what I do. I have fun when I'm out there, and I don't find it too fun just sitting on my goal line playing percentages. I like to move.
Scott, it's great to catch up with you here. I know this is going to be a busy day. Take advantage of the time you got here to get settled here. Welcome to Nashville, and can't wait to meet you in person as we get closer to training camp here.
Appreciate it, gentlemen. We'll see you soon.
All right. Scott Wedgwood, goaltender, Nashville Predators. Great perspective on his role, what his goals are going forward here. He joins a really good family of goaltenders with a lot of success, and he's had some very good success of his own here the last few years in Dallas. Stay tuned. We'll come back, and we'll react to that a little bit to wrap up hour number two of Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game.
You know, I've proven to be a reliable goalie and a goalie that can win games in this league, and, you know, plan to do that and, you know, obviously stay in the NHL. So, you know, Askarov's going to be doing the same thing behind me, and Juice is going to be doing the same thing to put his best foot forward every night, and that's, you know, friendly competition. There's no harm, no foul. But, obviously, when you have a kid of his caliber, I don't know him, he's going to be, you know, pushing to get up there or get a look regardless of how that comes, and he's got to make the most of it when he gets it. And, you know, that's the truth of it. I'm going to cheer for him. He's part of my team. We want to win as an organization, and if he can get in there and help us win games, we're all for it. You know, the biggest championship is the hardest to win, and it takes more than just, you know, five superstars. It's a whole team and a whole organization. So whatever we need to win, we'll do it. And, you know, I'm proud to be a part of it, and we'll see where it goes.
Great interview with Scott Wedgwood, yes, goaltender, Nashville Predators. As we broadcast, Willie and D-Mace from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. I thought about this as he was saying that, D-Mace. There's a veteran that I think has a good scope of what his role is going to be, because he understands it can go different ways. But I think this is a tough thing for a team player, but a good team player knows how to do it. He talked about a friendly competition, right? He said, if Askarov is up and he's doing well, I'm going to cheer for him. That's good for my team. If Saros is doing well, I'm going to cheer for him. It's an interesting relationship, backup goalie to starting goalie, because you want to play, right? I'm sure for a wide receiver, if you're in a wide receiver rotation, you're like, yeah, I think I'm better than that guy. I need to compete with him.
Yeah, I just need
we need to make each other
reps,
better.
Yeah.
But it's a fine line, because I've seen it in minor league baseball where I've seen some guys just flat out, they can't even hold it inside them. They're rooting against their teammates, pitchers, because, like, I need to beat that guy out. It's like a dog-eat-dog survival of the fittest. So it can be unhealthy at times. But I think Scott Wedgwood said all the right things there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he knows he's in a peculiar situation here.
Yes.
He knows it. And he knows he has to be himself, but also you got to walk that line. Because you have to compete as if you are a starter, but you also know that, hey, listen, they got this young guy behind me that, you know, he's going to be competing too. So I got to take care of what I can take care of, but I also got to root these other guys on. And I can't allow myself to get into my own head. I can't worry about Askarov. He's coming. I know he's there, but I can't worry about Askarov. His problem is not even UC Soros. That's not he knows UC is the guy. It's how do I maintain that team first mentality and attitude when I want to play any opportunity I can get, but I know I got this young guy that everybody loves that they're hoping he finally sort of gets it and put it all together. Well, what if he gets it and put it all together and I'm still here? What do I do? It seems like from the way he answered the question that he would accept it and cheer him on, which is great. That's what you want. Because ultimately, you know, listen, they don't remember anyone outside of the starting goalie until you make a mistake.
Right.
Nashville Predators win a cup this year, which I am sort of kind of predicting. They're not going to mention Wedgwood or Askarov. They're going to mention Soros. So just, you know, he's like, I'm just going to do my job. I'm going to cheer the young guy on, but I'm going to be a great teammate because they may need me. I know I'm a play, but they may need me more. They may not.
There is something to be said for knowing how to prepare yourself and be mentally ready when you may not play.
Because that's hard to do,
yeah,
man.
Yeah,
it's hard.
When you get that call, it could happen at any moment, and it may not happen for a couple weeks. But last year, Jake Ottinger got hurt. He started probably 10 or 12 straight games, I think, at one point. And he went 16-7-5 in 28 starts last year, which definitely helped him. The other thing that jumped out at me, he was talking about all of the little things that go into being successful in today's NHL, how much advanced the technology is, the video study. They're going to find all your weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And it dawns on me, here's a guy, he's not as talented. I think it's fair to say. I think he would tell you this. He's not as gifted physically as Yaroslav Askarov. Mm-hmm. It's probably not even close because Askarov is off the charts in this stuff. But this is where they keep trying to get the message across to Askarov. Keep working on these little things. Mm-hmm. He doesn't understand all of the nuances yet, and you can't until you've had the reps. Mm-hmm. And it takes some time. And that's why I think there's this message of, we don't think he's quite ready yet. He can still use more time in the AHL, and we need that veteran like Wedgwood to sort of bridge that gap. But this is going to be what's interesting to watch, right? Because you've got an initiative from Askarov's agent, probably Askarov, who's young and confident. He's got swagger.
Ready to go.
He's saying, I'm ready.
I think he's ready to go.
It's like ready. Luke Skywalker. He thought he was ready to face Darth Vader.
But he wasn't.
Yoda was like, you're not ready. You're not ready. He's like, I'm going anyway.
You see what happened.
I think I can.
Got his hand cut off. He lost his lifesaver.
Exactly,
yeah.
Man. Now you had to go get another arm.
You had to get
an
electronic hand.
Exactly. But it probably worked out better for him, you know, in the end. Yeah.
You're spoiling the movie for people? Come on.
If you hadn't seen it by now, something's wrong with you. No. There's a time table on when you can or cannot say. So I believe Willie can say it now because you should have seen it. But
if you haven't seen it by now, you don't want to.
Yeah,
see
you
it.
Don't want to. But that's going to be one of the more interesting, I don't even want to say battles, but that's going to be one of the more interesting things to watch. The backup goalie. Like, how are they going to, because they're going to want to bring Askarov up for a game or two just to sort of kind of like, okay. Let's give him a little bit. Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. How Askarov plays when he does. It's not an if. It's when he does come up and have another opportunity to play this year. And then how does Wedgwood then respond? Because I think it'll be, you know, we're going to throw Askarov in, and then you will play the next game, Wedgwood. How does Wedgwood then respond after that?
Yeah. And if he thinks he's going to play, and they say, well, we're going to let Askarov
exactly,
you have to navigate that mentally.
That's an ego blow
inwardly,
right,
you're like, ooh, that should be my game.
Exactly,
I've been waiting to play this.
That team, I was waiting.
It takes a really good person, teammate, to say, all right, I get it. This kid's talented. I'll have to wait my turn, and when I get my number called, I've got to be ready. It's not everybody can do that.
No.
But you could tell with his answer that they identified him as a guy that they think can handle whichever way this thing goes.
Exactly.
And that's a good thing to have. We'll see how it all plays out. When we come back, hour number three, we've got a lot up our sleeve here. SEC Media Day is going on. We're going to get back into some football talk during the final hour of the show. Stay tuned. We're coming back here on 102.5 The Game.